Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Despite some recent good news about a slowing in the rise of healthcare costs, the United States continues to outpace our European allies by an almost 2-to-1 margin in spending on healthcare. Lost in the weeds of hospital finance and doctor salaries is the fact that inflation in the prices of pharmaceuticals has outpaced that of the overall economy for more than a decade. In fact, medication is one of the biggest drivers in the overall rise in healthcare costs. Recent innovations, particularly in chemotherapy drugs for cancer and new pills for the treatment of hepatitis C, are spectacular advancements, but their prices are breathtaking, on the order of $100,000 per patient per year for a supply of medications to treat these chronic illnesses. If you're stuck without health insurance, this is simply not doable. The sad truth is that even with health insurance, many of these newer medications are not covered or require large copays or deductibles before insurance helps defray the cost. For some in our society, it comes to a choice between food and rent or their medication. That's why locally we're truly blessed to have the Tulsa County Pharmacy, which has had a pioneering medication reuse program since 2004. The brainchild of former Tulsa Health Department director, the late Dr. George Prothrow, the Tulsa County Pharmacy enables nursing homes and other facilities that stockpile medications to donate them so they can be reused and given to patients in need. This has the double good of preventing the pharmaceuticals from being dumped into our sewer system and provides them to people in need. The pharmacy has been ably run by Tulsa County Director of Social Services Linda Johnston, who was recently featured for her work in an interview with host Steve Inskeep of Morning Edition. Johnston stopped by the studio to educate us about the initiative. Linda Johnston, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I want to start by asking you about the Tulsa County Pharmacy. I mean, 2004, right? It's been going on 11 years. How did the program get started?
Well, Tulsa County has always operated a pharmacy, and for many years, we purchased medications at cost. At much reduced cost, because we are a government, because we're adjoined several big, large buying groups, and we sold those medications to our clients at a very reduced cost. It was clear to me from sitting just a short period of time in our lobby that people were having a hard time paying for their medicine, even at that reduced cost. And so I began to try to figure out, to search and think about where were other sources of medication. And then became a part of a group that was interested in trying to figure out how we could acquire unused medications at nursing homes, long-term care facilities. And this was really before we even had assisted living facilities in this community. And so we recognized that the tremendous need in our public really drove us and drove us to find another source that we could provide to Tulsa County constituents without costing the taxpayers a whole lot of money, too.
So what was the, prior to what we're talking about now, the pre-existing pharmacy, who was eligible to purchase at that pharmacy?
It was low-income people, residents of Tulsa County. You know, we sort of used the food stamp guidelines, the eligibility criteria. However, we were pretty flexible because we understand there are some people that if we help for just maybe 90 days, they are self-sufficient after that. As an example, maybe dad's transmission fell out of his truck and he can't get back to work. So he had to spend all of their money to get his truck fixed so that he could stay on his job. Well, if we can help them through that period of time, then probably in 90 days, we're never going to see that family again. We're never going to see that particular person. And conversely, we have a lot of elderly people who are living on extremely low fixed income. And so they are program participants month after month. And we recognize that, you know, there's a tremendous cost to our society if you cannot acquire the medications that your doctor puts you on. You're going to end up back in the ER again. You're going to have downtime if you are still employed. I mean, there's a tremendous impact not only on your health. I mean, you could also end up losing your life. I mean, today we know that medication is often the cure. It is often maintenance, your life maintenance, and maintains the quality, helps you maintain the quality of your life. And so it plays, that pharmacy plays a real important role.
Okay, so take us back. You were, you had a pharmacy program, but you felt it wasn't adequately meeting the needs. And somebody somewhere realized there was this existing pretty massive supply of unused medicine that was essentially going to go to waste. So tell us who came up with the idea and how you managed to enable this program.
Well, Dr. George Prothrow, retired, beloved pediatrician in this community, and once the former executive director of the City County Health Department, very interested in public health issues, kept telling me that nursing homes, long-term care facilities, had a whole lot of unused medication and that they were wasting it. They were literally flushing it down the toilet. And I finally sat him down one day and said, what are we going to do with that medicine and how are we going to get it? And explain what's going on in your head to me. And so it didn't take long. I got what he was really talking about. And so Dr. Prothrow, Dr. Jerry Gustafson, retired, respected surgeon in this community, and Michael LaPola, and I sat down and began to form a strategy. And Michael LaPola did a whole lot of research with regards to what kind of regulatory barriers we were going to face. Shockingly, there were no state or federal barriers to recycling this medication. But in Oklahoma, if you don't have a law that says that you can do something, you can't do it. And so we began the arduous task of going to the Oklahoma legislature for 7 long years to get the language in place that we needed to start to pilot our notion, to pilot our what we had in floating around in our heads. And a lot of people ask me, so how did you all finally get the attention of the Oklahoma legislature? Chocolate therapy.
Is that right? Chocolate lobbying?
Chocolate therapy. I had a dear friend who was extremely supportive of the notion that we were trying to get the legislature to bless for us. He was a pharmacist, and we had him take the unit dose packaging. It's the cards that have the little clear plastic bubble on that you'll see a pill in. We had him put M&Ms in them. We did an adorable label, Dear Senator Such and Such, please eat one M&M between now and the end of legislative session. Please support House Bill. I've forgotten the number now. Our bill became known, the M&M Bill.
Brilliant.
And it flew through the Oklahoma legislature with only one dissenting vote.
Wow. So in hindsight, then, it was really this having this catchy, almost marketing ploy that did
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
But you had, it sounds like early on, you must have at least had the support of, say, the Tulsa County Medical Society, like
a group of doctors.
Yeah.
And we did. They were, doctors understand this. They understand the challenge of acquiring medication. They understand how expensive medication is. And, you know, bless doctors' hearts, just because you're not practicing anymore, that doesn't mean you stop. And they are very interested in their community and issues that impact the health and well-being, I guess, until you lay them flat on the ground. They just are amazing in their commitment to a lot of initiatives in this community. And the brilliance of those M&Ms, the Oklahoma legislature, every year there's probably between 5 and 10,000 bills filed every year. We had to figure out some way to separate yourself from the pile. And it was a bit of brilliance that we decided to use to separate ourselves from the crowd. And, who doesn't like chocolate?
Well, who doesn't like chocolate and, moreover, you know, medical chocolate? Because we now know if we read
it's therapeutic.
The health headlines, right, there's thought to be some goodness to dark chocolate. In moderation,
That's right.
In moderation. But some cardiovascular benefits. Okay, so one question I have about that story is, was there actual opposition to this notion, or was it simply just a matter of getting the attention of the legislators?
There really wasn't any objection. The first question that we would get when we would go and meet with the individual members of the legislature is, who's doing this? Bring us information and data about an existing program somewhere in the country. And there wasn't anybody. And, you know, we were seriously blazing new trails here. So there was a couple of years that the legislature just couldn't believe that somebody in Oklahoma came up with an innovative idea, I guess. I'm not sure. And so that was hard when, you know, they wanted to see some history. Who's done this? What were the issues? And so we literally were blazing trails. And that lack of ability to send them to someone who has already done it really was an impediment for a number of years.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Our guest today is Linda Johnston, Director of Social Services for Tulsa County, and we're talking about the Tulsa County Pharmacy and the story behind its start and passing the state legislature. It took 7 long years, but a strong marketing ploy with M&Ms, prescriptive M&Ms, I think, helped carry the day. And you mentioned how the legislature was looking for a comparable program, saying essentially, where has this been done before? And how can we, who can we model this on? And in fact, there was no one else to model on. You were kind of inventing it. And there was an original idea here in Oklahoma. So now it seems as though you're somewhat of the national model for other folks, right? Especially because of this attention that you got in the last month. Now, this is what I want to tell you. For listeners that didn't catch the segment, Linda was featured on Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition. She had an interview there with Tulsa County Pharmacy and kind of took the world by surprise. This really led to your inbox kind of blowing up, didn't it?
It sure did. We've heard from many interested, from all kinds of walks of life. I talked to a major from the Salvation Army this morning, and we've had people from the military interested in it. We've had a lot of doctors. We've had people from the social and human services world. We've had retired nurses. There's just, it really appeals to a lot of people and how simple the notion is. And everybody recognizing that there is a tremendous amount of medication out there that's not used. It comes from the health industry. We don't have to worry about it being tampered with or something like that. And so there's just a whole lot of contacts related to this notion.
Coast to coast? I mean, you've been getting them from all over the country, even some from all over the world, people asking you these questions?
I've had dialogue with some doctors out of Canada, but not as a result of the interview with Steve. You know, Canada was very interested in when they learned of this program probably 4 or 5 years ago. And the first conversation I had with the doctors that called me, it took 20 minutes for them to convince me, because I thought people in Canada got free health care and free medications, when they don't. They really do not. And so we spent a lot of time talking to those doctors and sending them information and providing them. I have a how-to packet, so when somebody calls me, I either can mail them or I've got it digitally, I can email it to them. And so it's pretty easy to communicate with, but the numbers that contacts that we were getting were almost overwhelming.
Wow. Well, congratulations to you on that. I know that probably all that attention may get you straying from what you like to do the most, which you told me offline was to, you know, just do the work.
Yeah.
So tell us about the work. I mean, how many clients, how many patients are you able to serve at the Tulsa County Pharmacy?
Well, we have recycled $16.8 million. Now, the important thing for you to understand is that that's the wholesale price. That's the average wholesale price. So if I took that $16.8 million and tried to figure out a retail cost, that would at least be double that.
Goodness.
At least. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And people often ask me, is that the medicine going into your pharmacy or is that the medicine going out? That's the medicine going out. When we dispense it, we actually fill a prescription, that's when we assess the current value of it, the current wholesale value of it.
Do the nursing homes that donate their unused medications, do they take a write-off or do they value or put a valuation on the medicine they give you
No.
as well? No.
No. The value of the medicine is assessed by my software. We are tied into a couple of distributors that we buy medicine from, and so that software puts the current wholesale price onto that prescription when we fill it.
So $16.8 million in about 11 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the key points I heard on the Steve Inskeep interview, I have to ask you to repeat here, what was the investment? What was the cost of setting up this program? How much have you spent or the county spent to do this?
A little less than $6,000. To recycle $16.8 million worth of medicine.
So that seems like quite a return on investment.
Yeah, that's a pretty good return for taxpayers.
Yeah.
When we first started the program, we knew that we had to have some kind of containers to put the cards in, to organize them. And so I told all of my employees, you go home, you get all of your empty shoe boxes, and you bring them to work tomorrow. And everybody was very diligent and came walking in with bags and of shoeboxes, and those cards fit perfectly in a shoebox. Well, we quickly figured out that we weren't going to be able to have enough shoeboxes to meet the demand of the medicine that was coming in. So we have had to buy some plastic containers that are commonly used at libraries to store magazines in, and those cards fit perfectly in there. That's really our only expense. We had a pharmacist, we had a pharmacy, we had the infrastructure, we had pharmacy techs, we had everything we needed, and so this program has not cost us anything other than those plastic containers.
So basically by using infrastructure or using personnel that you already had, you were just adding on this extra supply that you were really able to get from a little bit of ingenuity and know-how, and then this, you mentioned this legislative effort.
Yeah.
So does it require your pharmacist or your techs to repackage the medications? In other words, if you get a bulk from, say, you know, nursing home A or long-term care facility B, and they just bring in a pile of different medications, I mean, I'm assuming you have to go through them and inventory them, figure out what they are, have to probably identify them, make sure they're in good shape. You know, one question that came up in the wake of the NPR interview you did was, you know, are any of these medications ever expired, or is that not an issue at all? These are not expired medications.
These are not expired. These are currently dated medications. We often do repackage them. If a card comes to us and there's no pills missing at all, we'll just relabel it. If our client is okay with that, the pills are hard to get out of the backside of that. I always joke that the foil on the back was created by NASA because it is really strong foil.
It is hard to punch those
out. And so if we've got an elderly person that struggles to get their medicine bottles open, they're not going to be able to get that foil off. So we repackaged some. We found also that if a client is a consumer of mental health services, it may trouble them that maybe some of the pills are missing from their card. And so we do repackage those and put them in the traditional amber-colored bottles that you would get if you went to any other pharmacy.
Now, I've come into contact with Tulsa County Pharmacy because occasionally I volunteer at the Bedlam Clinic, which is a combined OU and OSU and TU program that provides health care for the uninsured. And so often pharmaceuticals are a huge barrier to those folks without insurance to be able to get medications for an illness or a chronic condition. So we often will refer the Tulsa County Pharmacy. What are your other sources of patient traffic? Like, how do people find out about you, and where do they come from, or where are they referred from?
There's no end to the referrals that we get, as you can imagine. 211 refers a lot of people to us. Case managers make referrals, different agencies. We've worked hard to make sure that the social agencies in this community know we exist. They've all known us for many years. They know about our program. It has been a tremendous help to those agencies. Let me give you an example. We have, before we started this program, as an example, the Salvation Army would send their client down to the county pharmacy with a voucher that says, I'm willing to pay for Betty Sue's medication. We would fill that prescription, and then at the end of the month, we would bill the Salvation Army what they owed us for those vouchers that they submitted to us. I can't tell you the last time we billed the Salvation Army. All of those agencies now that can take that money that they used to spend to buy medicines for their clients and invest it in other programs, buy more case manager hours, it has really helped those agencies redirect their limited funds. And so we have no shortages of referrals, no shortage of referrals, and that's what we're there for.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher today. Our guest is Linda Johnston, Director of Social Services at Tulsa County. And we're talking about the Tulsa County Pharmacy, which has revolutionized the way that we reuse prescribed medication that no longer has a recipient in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. And it's essentially being recycled or reused through the Tulsa County Pharmacy. Linda, you mentioned that you really have no shortage of referrals. I'm wondering, do you have a sense of a ratio, or what percent of your medications that you dispense are donated versus that you actually have to buy, or are they all now donated?
Well, let me give you a budget example. Before we started this program, in an average year, we were spending $365,000 a year buying medication.
Wow.
This year, I probably won't spend $90,000.
Wow, so the donated medications have
completely.
And so that $90,000 that you do spend, that's based on sort of the need or the profile or the preceding years, what your patients
right.
have needed or demanded, as it were?
I mean, we're never going to get every medicine known to mankind through the Recycle Meds program. And so there are going to always be medicines that we're going to need to keep in stock in our formulary. And it's based on what our population needs. So they come in and say, my doctor's changed my medicine and I need to be on this. And we understand that they're probably going to be one of our clients for a while. And then we'll stock the medicine that they need.
What are the biggest gaps? That is, what are the medicines that you don't get donated that you wind up having to buy? Is there a particular class of medicines or for a particular condition or a brand name or something?
You know, we don't recycle insulin. because it has to be refrigerated. And we're very cognizant in making sure, and so there is a big demand for insulin. We buy it, and it's not as expensive as if you went to a retail pharmacy. But I would really like to try to find some time and some energy to figuring out how can we incorporate insulin in, which means we're going to have to probably buy small refrigerators or something like that for our doctor's vehicles. And we are very mindful of the potential of damage to medicines as you transport them. Cold and heat really impact the chemicals inside medication. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, it gets pretty warm in the summertime, and so we suspend pickup until the temps get a little more reasonable. Conversely, when it gets to be pretty cold in the wintertime, we stop picking up also. We're very guarded in making sure that we are safely transporting these medications. Additionally, most of my doctors that go out and pick up the medications are between 80 and 90 years old. Bless their hearts. I don't want them out during those extreme temps either. And so it just works, you know, it's a great partnership. If I'm not comfortable with them going out to pick up medicine, probably that medicine is not too safe to be transported at that time either.
So that bears some repeating. So your delivery guys, as it were, they're all guys, I think, are...
No, I got both genders.
Okay, good. Well, so then your delivery folk, we'll say.
Yes.
They're all retired physicians?
They're all retired physicians.
Wow. And do you have a nickname for them?
They're my angels.
And they're the ones, do they make weekly rounds do they cover the same nursing homes or do they have sort of like, oh, you know, Dr. Smith is here this week, let's download or, you know, hand off the bag full of medicines?
Well, we try not to overutilize them. We've got 68 nursing homes that are donating meds, and we've got 22 retired physicians that volunteer. So if they all the nursing homes call us at least once, that's three trips that each one of those docs are going to have to make. Now, not all the nursing homes are going to call us every month. We try to send them to a home that's close to where they live, so it's convenient. But we also have docs that will call and say, have I been fired? You haven't called me in a while. If we call a doctor, we give him a choice of, we've got three or four pickups, which one would you like? A lot of the doctors say, I'll take them all. I'll just spend my whole day going from nursing home to nursing home. We've had doctors that have gone out and bought themselves vans so that they've got adequate ability to transport 25, 30 boxes of medication. They're just amazing human beings, and I honestly believe if it wasn't for that core of retired physicians, we wouldn't be able to do this program.
Are the hospitals able to contribute to this, local hospitals?
No, because they all operate their own pharmacies. They don't have any unused medication.
So they're able to reuse their own?
You know, they just don't fill the prescription. You know, if Aunt Betty goes to the nursing home and she is given a prescription and it's filled for 60 days of something and Aunt Betty is allergic to it, or gets what I like to say, her promotion, then all that medicine is wasted. Now, in the hospital, they're not going to fill Aunt Betty 60 days worth of medicine. While she's there, they're going to give her her daily medication. You know, our law does allow us to get samples from doctor's office. We can use those also. The doctor's wives have felt like they were not contributing enough to this program. So they have volunteered to start working the doctor's offices, figuring out which doctors have got samples that could donate. And so the wives of the doctors are about to kick off going out to doctor's offices and picking up the samples. They were not going to be outdone by their husbands.
You're going to have to come up with a catchy name for that one.
I know. We really are. I've got to think about that one for a while.
That's a good one. Okay, so I have another question. With the advent of the Affordable Care Act, it's conceivable, although I know Oklahoma is one of the states that has not expanded Medicaid, but if everyone had health insurance of some variety, platinum, gold, silver, bronze, through their workplace, what have you, through Sooner Care, conceivably a day might come where they might all have prescription coverage. But it doesn't seem like your services for very discounted or free pharmaceuticals is the need is going down, is it?
No, absolutely not.
So would you say it's the need is stronger than ever, or is it just the need just cruises along?
No, I think the need continues to grow. the economic downturn that we've experienced in this country for the last few years, I often hear that our economy is picking up. I don't see it. And there's still a tremendous amount of people that are in need, particularly in our community. And, you know, when you're talking about, even if the economy picks up, that doesn't make Aunt Betty's Social Security check grow. And, the cost of everything seems to be going up. The cost of groceries is going up. Gasoline, fortunately, has gone down a little bit, but that ain't going to last too long. Utilities have gone up. We just see people really struggling to just provide the basics to their family. And I often say that we're just one uh-oh away from having different people standing at a front door of our building. And there's a lot of people in our county that I call economically fragile.
I've been reading a lot lately about newer medicines, for example, and you probably don't deal with this a whole lot, but cancer, chemotherapy, certain of the newer agents. But there is a class of drugs that treats hepatitis C, which may be something you see at the county, I don't know. But they're like Sulvati, which happens to be sort of the leading brand out there now, one of the newer drugs. The price tag on that is something like $84,000 for 1 year of treatment. Now, fortunately, the response has been good in that patients who take it seem to respond and clear the virus from their bloodstream. So it's almost like a cure, but that's a very expensive cure, to be sure. So someone without insurance, there's absolutely no way they're going to be able to pay for that. Do these newer drugs that come out, are those something that you interface with, or are you able to get, or are you just not seeing those because those are more in the specialty realm?
We're not seeing those kinds of medicines that I'm aware of yet. And we have a lot of patients in nursing homes use Lovenox, which is very expensive.
That's a blood thinner.
It's a blood thinner, yes. And I can remember one day I walked through the pharmacy. Our pharmacy shelves are probably 4 foot across. They're about a foot and a half deep, and they're floor to ceiling. And this medicine was just falling out of these shelves. I mean, the shelves were just loaded. And I stopped, and I thought, what is all this? I started looking, and it was Lovenox. And a Lovenox shot is about $1,000 a shot. And so I started asking questions, and my pharmacist in text, okay, what is this, and what are we going to do? We can't let all this medicine go to waste. And they said, well, we don't have that much demand for it. And I said, well, then we're going to pick up the phone, and we're going to start building relationships with doctor's offices that commonly write prescriptions for this medication. So when I go back there today, there's hardly any Lovenox on the shelves. I mean, we have been able to establish relationships with different kinds of doctors on different kinds of specialties that know if they've got a patient that can't afford their Lovenox, can't afford some other kind of special medication, they need to call us and see if we've got it. And a lot of patients can't leave a hospital because they can't afford the Lovenox. And we have social workers from the hospitals calling us all the time. Patient A needs to leave the hospital. We're going to send a prescription. His wife will come by and pick up a bag, and he'll be able to go home, and saving cost on so many levels. And who doesn't want to be at home rather than having to stay in the hospital?
I see, right. It's the irony of keeping someone in the hospital for an expensive medication when you're actually, the system, as it were, is spending more money keeping them
exactly.
In the hospital.
Exactly. Doesn't make much sense, does it?
Linda Johnston is the Director of Social Services for Tulsa County. Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views expressed by our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.